Welcome to It Is What It Is. How have you all been? It's been like forever. So I wasn't going to release anything until I had a bunch of stuff ready because I wanted to start all new, all fresh and whatnot. But life circumstances have changed a lot of things. So we're just going to say fuck it and we're going to go for it. So the first episode I'm going to release to you guys, hopefully, is going to be one of many because he has become a dear friend of mine. And this episode came about because I asked another friend of mine what my comeback episode should be, and he recommended one. And so I was going to do it. I was going to do Cassie Jo Stoddard from Pocatello. And one day I was sitting there watching TV and I was watching Cold Justice and they were doing a case in Idaho Falls, and they called up Brian Draper, and like it was absolutely nothing. Like they just called up Boise and they were like, hey, can we talk to Brian? I mean, I know there was obviously steps on the show. It made it just look like they called him. But anyway, so I went and I Googled his IDOC number, his prison inmate number, and I hopped on the inmate messaging board page thing, and I sent him a message. And so me and Brian Draper have become friends, and I know a lot of you are going to be like, oh my God, but he's a killer, and he killed someone, and I'm aware of that. I'm obviously very aware of that, but I don't believe in judging a person on one thing. Now, if it was a repeated act and it was something that was like, oh, damn, boy, you got an issue with this. You need to get that checked out. It'd be a whole other story. But it was a one-time crime, a horrible crime, but also committed 13-something years ago. So obviously he has grown and matured and grew up in prison. And so his outlook and everything else is very different than what it was back then. And I think once you hear this first episode and you guys kind of get to know him just a little bit, hopefully you guys will see that like he is a person just like you. And just because he did one horrible, shitty thing doesn't mean that we should just like judge him for the rest of his life. And so, yeah, I want to let you guys hear this phone call, and it's about 30 minutes long. Don't mind my asshole of a dog that heard another man's voice and was not happy about it. So there's a little minute in there where my dogs are being assholes. So hopefully you guys can hear over them. But I'm going to be giving Brian any questions you guys have or anything you guys want to know from him. And then hopefully we can do another follow-up episode and kind of get more of what you guys want to know about him out there. And we're going to be going on a hell of a ride together here soon. I will release another episode kind of telling you guys what's going on, because a whole massive amounts of shit have gone on and it's going to be pretty fucking nuts. But yeah, so here's Brian's episode. I hope you guys really enjoy it, and put the questions in the comments. If you're going to do negative comments, don't even waste your time, boo. Save those fingers. Save them. Save them for someone who gives a hoot. And I love all of you, and I've missed you guys so fucking much. You guys have no idea. I wish this was like a whole other episode, but I want to get this one out there. So have a great Friday, and let me know. Bye, guys.
Thanks to you from Brian Draper, an inmate at Idaho State Correctional Institution. To accept this call, press or say 5. To refuse this call will be recorded and subject to monitoring at any time. Thank you for using IC Solutions. You may begin speaking now.
Hello?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, what is going on? Not a whole lot. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. I've been waiting for you to call. Ugh.
I'm sorry?
I said I've been waiting for you to call.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, my email thing is getting... It's all messed up because I moved, and so... And I can't update my player, and so it's all messed up, and so I'm not getting emails. The emails I'm writing, so it's kind of messed up right now, so...
It's all good.
If you're okay, I can get it. I'm sorry.
It's okay. How have you been, though?
I've been okay. I got moved, and so I'm in a different area, so it's a little different, but it's nice, and I'm getting used to it still. So I lived in the place I was in for 10 years, so it was so it's a big change, you know. But other than that, I'm good.
Oh, wow. So where'd you move to?
I just moved to another tier, so it's like the other pod, I guess you could say pod.
Too. Gotcha, okay.
So, yeah, same unit, but different pod, yeah. So different people.
Nice.
Different atmosphere, yeah.
Different atmosphere, different vibe.
Yeah, different vibe, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. All right, so did you want to, do some of the episode today, or what did you want to do?
Sure, it's your call.
Well, really, it's up to you.
No, it's cool.
Okay, so then I'm already recording, so I can just chop out the first minute or whatever. And then, so we can just start off with, obviously, who you are, and then we can do all that fun jazz. So, I guess I really don't even need that part, because I already have the call introduction call. Anyway, okay, so obviously, you're Brian Draper, and...
I'm Brian Draper, yes.
All right, so give me kind of, like, your backstory, of course, whatever you're open to telling, and we'll just take it from there, and we'll just shoot the shit and see what happens.
My backstory?
Yeah, just not... I mean, whatever, obviously, whatever you're comfortable with, but just, like, where you're from, you grew up here, Idaho, that whole...
Okay.
Jazz.
Okay, that old jazz.
Yeah, the whole sing and dance, the whole, like, where you from kind of thing.
Okay, well, I'm Brian Draper. I'm 32 years old. I'll be 33 in 2 months. I was born in Pocatello, Idaho, in March 21st, 1990. I moved to Utah when I was 3. I lived in Utah till I was 11, and then I moved back to Pocatello, Idaho when I was 11, okay. And I lived in Idaho until I was 16 years old, and I was arrested for homicide and I was sentenced to life without parole at the age of 16 years old, and I've been in prison ever since. So that's like that's the gist of my backstory, I guess.
Okay, and so living in now, some people in their heads think that maybe you went straight to Boise at 16. Is that the case, or did you go to juvenile and then transfer?
No, so I was actually I was arrested and charged as an adult, and so I went to adult county jail, and I was in isolation the entire time because I was a juvenile and they didn't know what to do with me. There was no like real clear-cut rules on how I should be treated, and so I was kept in isolation the entire time. And so I was kept in isolation until the Alford County Jail, Alford Court, and then once I was sentenced, I went to the prison in Boise, and I was still in isolation because I was still a juvenile, and they didn't know what to do with me. And so I ended up spending one whole year in isolation on the whole, and I was finally released into general population up in the prison in Orofino, and I was released up there when I was 17. And so I was allowed to be in GP up there. And then when I turned 18, I was brought down here to the prison in Boise, and I've been here ever since.
Oh, okay. So Orofino first, and then there.
Yes.
And so you do maintain a job?
Yeah, I've been a janitor for pretty much the entire time I've been here. I've been a facilitator in a music room, a piano tutor. Yeah, I do all, you know, kinds of things. I stay busy. I try not to watch a lot of TV. I try to read at least a book a week, and I take notes on everything I read. I try to learn as much as I can about as many things as I can learn about, and you know, study music and, you know, write music and all those things. And I love teaching. I love teaching piano. It's one of my favorite things that I do here, and I exercise. I lift weights. And so, yeah, I live a pretty, pretty uneventful, you know, boring life, you know, nowadays, and I love it that way.
Right. You play piano? That's amazing.
Yes, I play piano, and I love it. Yeah, I've been playing since I was a kid, actually. I grew up LDS, and so I grew up playing hymns. And as I got older, I broke away from that, and I started, you know, writing all my own songs and playing Beethoven, and I fell in love with it. And after I came to prison, I started playing for the church here, and then I lost interest in playing for the church, so I started playing on my own. And then I was involved in our music room, and I would tutor piano, and I still have a piano class here that I teach, and so I do individual tutoring, for piano. I even taught, like, staff members how to play piano. That's my thing, is I live piano, and I play guitar and drums as well, but, like, the piano is just, that's it. I mean, that's my favorite thing in the world. I love it.
That's amazing. That's cool. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a piano player.
Is there anything over the years, because have you ever seen a show on yourself?
You know what? Yes, I have. So basically, we have, like, cable television. I remember on A&E, like, in 2015 or so, I was just, you know, flipping through the channels, and my friends told me that I was on TV, and so I thought it was the news or whatever, so I was like, okay, you know, I was interested in, like, what it was, because I want to see what everybody else is seeing. And so, and it was Lost for Life, which was a documentary I was involved in when I was 21 or 22. It's a long time ago. And so, yeah, I've watched parts of it because it's kind of hard to watch because it kind of feels like I'm watching another person's story, and it's confusing and it's upsetting, and it's part of my life that I really want to move on from, not move past, but, like, move on from.
Right.
Because it's not helping me in any way. But, yeah, and then there's been other shows that have been on A&E that just appear out of nowhere, and so I'll watch, like, you know, a minute or two, and I'll get disgusted, and I'll change it, and then I'll be in a rotten mood for, you know, a day or two. And so I learned that I just can't, you know, expose myself to that stuff anymore. So I don't,
right.
Yeah, I don't watch anything about my case anymore, no.
Well, that's good. Because always, like, what brought us, I guess I should tell everybody what brought us together. It's kind of weird. I was sitting there watching a show one day, and they were talking about your co-defendant, and they literally just called, it was the Cold Justice show, and they literally just called you like it was an everyday thing. They called Boise, and they were like, hey, put him on the phone, and Boise said, okay, cool. And then I was like, you know what? I want to talk to him. I've always wanted to talk to you. That Lost for Life documentary is what introduced me to you, obviously, besides what actually started it all. And so I've offered Brian a chance to have an open platform to just tell people what he would want people to know about him, besides the fact of what he's done, because he is a person and he has accomplished things in prison. And so I just kind of want you to tell everybody about the things that you've done, and pretty much just, like, obviously the lesson that you've learned from what happened and the person you are today.
Oh man, well, I've learned a lot of lessons, that's for sure. But okay, well, I think, like, the general, like, lesson I'd say is that be okay with who you are. I think that when I was a kid, I was so obsessed with trying to impress others and be somebody else that I never appreciated who I was as a person. And so I was always interested in being somebody else. And so I left Brian Draper behind. And obviously that led me to this, you know, in this reality that I'm living now. And I think that had I been appreciative of who I was and appreciative of my gifts and my talents back when I was a kid, and had I been okay with just being, a classmate and a kid at my school and not having to be important or special, or I would have lived a great, you know, great life and a great future. And instead I was worried of what everybody else around me thought of me. And I made horrible decisions because of that. And so, as I've been in prison over the years, I've been here for 16 and a half years now, I've just learned to appreciate life and appreciate every day that I have, and learn as much as I can about the world. And that's what I learned as well, is is when I was a kid, I didn't know anything about anything. Like, I didn't know anything. And so I learned everything from movies and the internet and TV. And so I had a very warped idea of what it meant to be a person. And as I've gotten older, I've learned so much about our world and our country and our government. And you know, I've been in relationships and I've been broken up with and I've been in love and I've been hurt and you know, I've just cherished all the experiences I've had, and I've learned so much about myself. And so that's, like, the ultimate, like, lesson I think I learned, is that just to appreciate being alive and appreciate being a person. Because when you lose everything, you lose everything, and all you want is to get it back. Like, I would give anything to just be able to be a normal person and to have a normal job, to have a wife and kids and a house. And, I mean, that's all I want now, and I can't have it. Because I messed up so bad when I was a kid. And so that's what I want to teach people, is just appreciate your life, everyday life, and just, you know, appreciate that. And that's what I would say.
Yeah. It's kind of surreal in your case, though, because, like, you do get to be alive, and I know that's going to be a lot of the comments people are going to say. They're going to say, well, he does get to live and she doesn't. But,
yeah, right.
And it's, I like to jump ahead of all the haters and the shit talkers, so I just, like, jump ahead of them and just answer that question for them. So, like, you acknowledge that and you know that, but really, the life that you have now is not, it is a life, yes, you do, or you are living, but you don't get those things. So, in a way, you're not living, you know what I mean? You are, but you're not.
Yeah, it's a type of life. It's not, like, everyday, like, normal life. And I do want to talk about that, though, is I absolutely understand that, like, she is gone and her life is over. And
there's
nothing that I can ever take back, or I can never give back to her. And I totally understand it. And I understand that there might be some injustice that I'm alive still. And I live with that every day of my life. And I struggle with that. And for years I struggled with that until I got older and I understood that there's no good that can come out of any of this unless I do something special with my life and I help people and I do something good with my life. And so that's what I learned, is that I can't just crawl into a corner and, you know, cut myself and kill myself. That's how I used to be.
Right.
You know, because that's not honoring her memory. It's not helping anybody change their lives. It's not bringing anything good into the world. And so I have to do that.
Right.
It takes work. So that's how I honor her memory, is doing something with my life.
And I think that's understandable. Like, I understand that. I completely get it. And I think that it's great that you did come to that conclusion and, like, try to. And that's what drew me to you, is in that documentary, if anybody watches it, that's on their own time, they can do it. But you the accountability you took in that show was just amazing. Like, it takes a lot to be like, yeah, I did what I did, and I just now have to learn and grow from what I did. It takes a lot for a person to do that, and that's what drew me to you, is your ability to acknowledge that.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, well, that's like the, I think that's the least that I can do, is just take responsibility for my actions. That's like the, you know, bare minimum of what I can do. And so I've done that, you know, years and years and years ago. I did that, and I took responsibility for what I did and the part I played in the crime, and tried to make sense of it and tried to understand why I got involved in that stupid crime, and then try to understand how I'm going to have a life in prison, you know, because I've accepted that I'm in prison for the rest of my life. And so, and I deserve to be here, absolutely. And so I'm trying to do whatever I can to do what I can
with the time you have.
And that's, it starts with being honest with myself and being honest with other people about what happened. Yeah.
And now people are going to wonder and ask, is there any possibility with any overturn, with any change in the law or anything like that, or is your sentence what it is?
No, my sense is what it is. And so, you know, I have life without parole, and that's exactly what it means, is I will be here until I die. And so I will be here until I'm in my 80s or my 90s, depending on how long I live. And so the life that I have is going to be completely different than anything I ever imagined, and that's my fault, that's my punishment. And so I've accepted that, and I will be here until I die, yes. So I just have to live on. I have to move forward and live on and,
exactly.
and do what I can and have meaning in my life. So, yeah, I'm not going to ever get out of prison. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
That's, in some ways, it's unfair, and but I get what, like, I get it because it's the law and it's, like, what you were sentenced to. But it is, in some ways, it is very, you were a kid. And some kid, like, sometimes in some positions, like, some things shouldn't be held against people forever. And it's, and that's what's great about you, is that that's not stopping you from growing and achieving and still wanting to become someone.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I understand. I wrestled with that for years.
Oh, I bet.
You know, I'd love to have the opportunity to, you know, give me a chance, but, you know, that's not how it works. And
right.
I don't get to pick my punishment. And so this is my punishment, and this is my reality, and I have to just accept it. And if I don't accept it, I'll always be upset and I'll always be bitter. And it's my fault that I'm here, and I can't blame anybody else, and I have to accept it. And so,
how long do you think it took you?
People suffer because of what I did. Even now, even all these years later, people suffer, you know, from what I did. And so I have to just accept it, and I have accepted it, and I'm living as best as I can, and, you know, I'm doing everything I can to have a meaningful life and to make amends for what happened, and that's partly, you know, how come I engage in these kinds of things and try to talk to kids and try to explain to kids that like, it's great to just be a person and be a kid and go to school and have fun, and that's all you need, you know, and appreciate it, you know, because when it's gone, it's gone, so appreciate it.
Right. Because just so everybody is clear, you did, your main thing was just notoriety and not being good, not being okay with just being who you were and wanting to be known for more.
Notoriety, I think, is the wrong word. I think it's more trying to understand who I was among my peers at my school. And so I think that my whole entire life as a kid and adolescent was trying to fit in somewhere in school, and I wanted to have an impact on the environments around me. And as I got older, I felt like I was, you know, I was nothing. I was insignificant. I was just another person at school, and I wasn't appreciated or liked. And all the girls out there didn't, you know, talk to me or give me attention. And so, you know, it became a competition to, how do I get attention? How do I feel important and special? And how can I feel like I mean something? And that's what led me to all of the stupid things online, the, you know, Columbine High School shooting, the, you know, Scream movies. Those things all, you know, came into my life and had a bad time. And I just thought that, hey, that's, you know, I could be important that way. I could, you know, fit in that way. Everyone would think that was cool if I did something, you know, like that. And I think that the crime itself was extremely horrible and adult. But, like, the impetus was just trying to be important among my peers. And it sounds really, you know, petty and stupid, but that's really, you know, what the impetus was just trying to be important among my peers and impress people. And I felt like that is how I could impress people, and it was extremely stupid.
Right.
But that's what I was thinking at the time.
How long did it take, like, and how long did it take you to, like, not be okay with your situation, but just know, like, I can make something good about this, like, I can grow from this? Like, how long do you think you had struggled before you became, like, I'm not gonna say you don't struggle, because I can guarantee you it's a struggle, but, like, how long did it take before you were like, no, I am something besides that?
Yeah, I understand. Okay. Well, I think for the first, like, 5-6 years I was in prison, I was extremely depressed, and, you know, I used to cut myself, and I dreamed of suicide all the time, and I had, you know, I still had not healed, I guess, from the experiences I had when I was a kid and, you know, from the crime. And so I, you know, crawled into a ball and I just hurt myself. And it, you know, every day was horrible and it was a struggle, and I'm surprised I made it through, honestly. But, you know, as I moved past that time and I understood that I have a responsibility now, and that crawling into a ball and, you know, dying is easy. You know, it doesn't take any effort at all. And so, but to do something with your life takes effort, and you start with doing something important in your life. And so I started to, you know, started tutoring piano. And as I did that, I started to appreciate, you know, other people around me, and I started to love helping other people. And so it was a slow kind of like progression into who I am now, and it started with coming out of my shell and experiencing things that, you know, other people around me, and like falling in love, and like all these things really helped me become an adult, and I was able to leave my childhood behind me. And so as I became an adult, I started acting like an adult. I started having responsibilities, and then I understood that I have a responsibility now to her and her family and to everybody who cares about me to do something, you know, with my life, because that's the only thing I can do to make amends. That's it. And so I'd say about like 25 or 26 is when it really hit me that I can, you know, I can do, you know, something with my life if I try hard enough and if I give it everything I got. And so I started back then, and I'm still doing that now.
Wow, so that took quite a time. That took way longer than, like, in my head, it's like something like, I'm like, okay, he just woke up one day and he was like, shit, like, this is it. We just got to rock with it and just go with it. But, like, you struggled for a long time.
Yeah, I struggled to make sense of everything that happened. And I was still dealing with a lot of addictions in my mind. I would still, even up until I was 22 or 23, I was still, you know, I was still watching things on Palm. Like when they came on TV, I'd watch things on it. And I realized around that time is that it was an addiction that I had to get out of my life completely if I ever hoped to do anything else with my life. And so I had to get it out of my life. And so I decided about 22 or 23, you know, that I was absolutely done with all of that shit. And so I was done with it. And so, you know, I moved on from it, and I never looked back. And I don't watch things on it anymore. I don't, you know, read books on it anymore. I'm done. And so, but it took me a long time to get it out of my system. And so, but I think that, like, even like when I was 18 and 19, I was still like, I think I was just tortured back then. I was just still, you know, very much a tortured soul, and I didn't understand how I thought. I didn't understand anything about anything, and so all I did was daydream and you know, think about the past and think about how much I hated, you know, everything and everyone around me, and I didn't have any purpose. And I hated myself. I hated myself for what happened, and so I just tortured myself. You know, I deprived myself of things. I cut myself, and I did that for years until I finally realized that I was extremely selfish and I was acting selfish, and that I had to concentrate on other people and, you know, my family, and that's how I started, you know, growing and getting out of that childhood self.
Does your family come see you? Like, is that, like, are you still, like, a big part of, like, your family life?
Yeah, my family's really supportive still. I see my mom and my dad about every 2 weeks or so. They got a divorce about 10 years ago, and so I see them separately, and my sister's still in my life, and she's doing good. She's almost 30 years old now, and she was 13 when I was arrested, so she's getting older, and, yeah, I see her every couple, about every month I see my sister. So yeah, I'm I try to stay active and engage in my family's life, and, you know, I try to keep them, you know, happy and try to help them as much as I can. And so I see them though almost every week. I see my family at least once. So
that is so cool. That is so cool.
That's what's helped me get forward is, you know, having my family there has helped immensely, you know, and I'm lucky like that. So.
And do you think the fact that you've been as like accountable as you have, and you've grown from your thing, has like helped your family like grow, like connect? So there's no like with some people, how they sit out here and they're like, well, he would never, he didn't even, like, it's all the other one, he could never, like, your family really doesn't have that because you have taken accountability. So they're like, no, he did what he did, but that's not who he is.
Yeah. I think, I don't want to say this, but I think that what I did when I was, you know, a kid, I think it irreparably damaged my family. And I think it, you know, I think it led to my parents having a divorce. I think it, you know, led to my sister's problems and her drug use. And I think that my family, I think we've, I don't know how to say it. I mean, I destroyed my family. I destroyed my family. And so I think that we've done okay with the reality that we have, but the truth is that I destroyed my family, and our family will never be the same, and it'll never be normal, and I think that all the effects of what happened still, you know, they still affect all of us here and now, and my dad is an alcoholic, he's a recovering alcoholic, but I think I had a large part to play in that, and that's why I try to be there for my family as much as I can now, because of all the damage I caused them. But yeah, I think that, you know, they're real about what happened, and they're real about, you know, my sentence, and so they are real, you know, about things, but the damage I caused is just, it's too much, you know, it's too much, and I think that we do what we can, but it's never going to be the same, you know, it's never going to be normal, and that's my fault.
That sucks. Like, I'm glad that, like, you guys are still, like, a family unit in, like, your own weird, like, your own way. Because, like, when my dad went to prison, I know what that's like to have, like, bam, everything in the world stops and changes for both sides. Like, so, yeah, I totally get it. And, like, we failed, too. Like, we are a basket case. If, like, we'll totally not talk about that on the microphone because, like, my family's nuts. But,
yeah.
But, like, I'm just really glad that you are, like, you're growing and, like, you're becoming this amazing person. I didn't even know you could play piano. Like, I wish you could, like, have a piano next to you so I could hear it.
Oh,
pianos are, like, my thing. I used to play the violin when I was younger. So, I love that. And so it's amazing that you get to teach that and still have, like, a passion and all that. It's just really nice and comforting to hear that.
Thank you. I love it. I'm trying, and that's all I can do is it sucks that I'm in a situation, but it's my fault, and I'm trying to do what I can, man, and it's just, you know, it's tough. It's not, you know, it's not easy, and you know, I lost a lot of things, but it's, you know, like I said, it's my fault, and I have to be okay with just, you know, where I'm at. So, and I'm trying, I really am, I'm doing everything I can, I'm, you know, I take college courses as well, you know, as well, so I'm studying, and I want to get a degree in English, I want to teach English here, and, you know, creative writing, maybe, that's my end goals, I want to teach people here how to engage in themselves.
1 minute remaining.
So.
Oh, that's so cool. Do you want to do another episode, or do you not want to, or we can just, what do you want to do now?
Oh, I could.
We can do it another day.
Right now. Yeah. Can we do that?
Yeah. Okay. Let's just message each other and we'll catch up and do all that fun jazz. And I'll just release this whenever.
Okay.
But thank you so much for your time.
It's great talking to you.
It's always great talking to you. So just message me and then we can either do one in between, not recorded or whatever, and we'll figure it out.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Of course. You have a great day.
Hey, you too. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.